You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 175, and today we have a special guest joining us for discussing the topic of how do we handle conflict in marriage? What is a biblical route to dealing with marital conflict? And so our special guest, I'll go ahead and introduce him, Sean Von Bargen. If I'm saying that right, I hope I am. he is the lead pastor of Cornerstone Community Church in Tenino, Washington, and also a marriage counselor. So he is a great person to join in for an episode on this kind of topic. Thanks, Sean, for joining us.
My pleasure.
So maybe if you could just give us a kind of Cliff Notes version of your story, how you came to know Christ, and just a brief background to maybe how you got into marriage counseling. I think that's always helpful for people to hear. And then if you, after that, we'll kind of bring out some questions that we have, and we'll specifically address this subject. So go ahead and tell us your story first.
Sure. I'll give you the short version, right? So I came to Christ when I was 13. Had been exposed to God before, but hadn't known him in a personal way. And it was really when I was 13 years old, I'd literally just told some of this on Sunday. And so, Bible literally fell off the bookshelf in front of me as I was walking in between the living room and the kitchen. And I just kind of opened it. Well, it opened, and I just decided to read the passage. It would be much cooler if I could remember the passage itself. But for whatever reason, it was then and there that I kind of just accepted that God was real, that Jesus was real, and that I would make it out of my childhood. Okay, it was a rough childhood, and it was actually probably rougher after that, but I had a little bit more hope of getting out on the other side. And so it was a immature walk with Christ for the next probably two decades, as I related on Sunday, growing very little in my faith, but just feeling God still had a pull and a purpose there for me. And so the funny part here is that both occupations that you're listing are both of the occupations that I pretty much was adamant I would never do. And so I didn't like counselors because of my troubled childhood. And so they had kind of betrayed me at the past. So I said I would never become one of them. And when I started to get involved in the church, I said, no, I will not be a deacon because deacons have to preach every once in a while, and I'm not doing that either. And now I find myself doing a lot of counseling and doing a lot of lead eldering. And so both are good and both have been great for me. I have a strong love for relationships. And so that actually is a big part of why I wanted to be a counselor when it's all said and done, after I made that change in submission to God to kind of follow his lead. I'm a product of divorce. My dad's been in and out of multiple marriages. My mom, a couple, and one of them not very well, neither of them really healthy. And so most of my family has been divorced. And so I just never really wanted to have that in my own life. And I thought there must be a better way. And God certainly has lined a better way to function in that relationship. And so I have just found hope and purpose and building into relationship with God. And then that alone strengthening my relationship with my own wife, who we just celebrated 20 years, just last month.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think it's awesome. God works in unique ways with each one of us to draw us to himself. And so every time we hear a testimony, it's a special thing. I think it is significant that you have that background of not necessarily being a big fan of counselors, and now you are one, I think that there's some benefit, in fact, in God's mysterious workings. There's benefits in going through certain trials in your life, especially early in your life, because you have a vantage point that others may not, and you can see how others would be going through struggles, and you're able to identify with them. But you're able to bring in this lens of hope, as you talked about, with what the message of the gospel is. And so maybe a good starting point would be, what are some of the most common root causes of marital conflict that you have come across?
Well, if we really want to distill it down to a root, then the number one problem, and you know this, it's probably the number one problem in everything, and that would be selfishness. Like, you know, we just, when it's all said and done, when it all boils down, it's just us that usually get in the way of whatever the problem is. And it's certainly a case for relationships too, because most people, right? And a relationship is really in between any two people, including our relationship with God, that when we start to make it about us, we cease to see the other person. And that's not really what a relationship is about in general. A relationship is always pointed at somebody else, and self is only pointed at self. And so, you know, when we talk, most people will come into the counselor's office, right? Or they'll come to their pastor and they say, hey, we're having problems. We need to get better communicating. We don't connect, he says this, she says that, we don't understand each other. But when it all really what they're talking about is connection, like most of those problems, that selfishness, well, how that really boils down is that people just fall out of connection with each other. Turns out we actually know how to talk with each other. We do it all the time. Everybody's talking to somebody else for the most part. Even if that's in ways that are not helpful, we're still communicating with each other. But when we fall out of connection with somebody, it doesn't matter what you say at that point, because if things aren't well, you can say all the same things when things are going well, but then that just rubs you wrong. And then people start to disconnect even more, right? And they just get further away, and that gets harder to bridge the gap. And so a lot of it is, how do you teach people to come back into relationship? How do you teach them to come back into being friends? How do you teach them to join back in their commitment to each other, their covenant with each other? And that's a lot of what you're trying to get people to buy into. Less self, more the other person, but ultimately, where can you connect again?
Well, and just recently, I was leading a study on Genesis 3, which talks about the fall of man. And you see right there, you know, the roots, so to speak, of all marital conflict going on. When Adam is confronted by God about his part in the sin, and, you know, he's a blame-shifting man like the rest of us. He wants to get the guilt off of himself and onto somebody else. So he says, it was the woman you gave me. She's the reason. And then the woman blames the serpent. But I think that that aspect of not taking ownership for your role in the conflict has got to be huge. What are some aspects to that you can speak to? And maybe say there's a couple listening to this right now, and they do have those communication issues you're talking about. They're not able to relate well, and it's like that fight they had a few days ago, it's still bugging them, it's still getting in there, and you can tell it's affecting their intimacy. What are some things you would tell them, especially from a biblical perspective?
As far as to own their side of it, to accept, I mean, right, like one of the biggest things about owning our stuff is moving away all the distractions, right? It's cutting to the chase and really confession, right? Like there's confession. And so it comes back to a truth and a grace, right? With God, always both are present and active 100% of the time. You know, God's truth doesn't feel like grace, but God's grace doesn't feel like truth. But they're still there and they're always present. So when you talk about coming into accepting responsibility, right, most people get really confused by their emotions, which aren't necessarily based in either of those at the time, but they're very present when you're upset, when you're distressed, when you're distraught, even when you're really happy, they're really, you know, present, but they're not always grounded in truth and they're not always grounded in grace. And so, you know, most people need to wake up and realize that their spouse isn't their enemy and they didn't plot their demise in the morning when they woke up wondering, hey, you know, how can I get back at Stacy? Because, you know, I just got to get her today. And, you know, how do I get at John? Because, you know, today at 2, I'm just going to make him his life horrible. Like, those things seem to be whispers that we get in our head, but they're certainly not truth. And so part of accepting that is just knowing that whatever we feel does not necessarily lead us back to a truth that we can trust. You see this in the Psalms all the time, even where David, you know, unhinged, will go off on an emotional tangent, but then he grounds himself in truth. Like, most of the time he comes back and goes, you've abandoned me. I can't even believe you've let all my people just hunt me like a dog and yada, yada, yada. And then he goes, but I know you and I know your ways are good. And he comes back to a stabling foundation. And that's paramount to being able to come back and go, you're right. I'm a broken person that doesn't get things right. And so I do have a place in this argument that hasn't helped things. Maybe my body language gave off that, you know, I'm uncaring right now. I can own that. I can humble myself. I can bear myself, you know, and move into grace, right? Let's do that. So I think both are present, but man, confession's a big thing for us to move forward. And it's a big thing in marriages, being able to be real and take ownership. If Eve had been, yeah, I was duped, you know, I did it though. If Adam had been, yeah, she gave me the apple, that's true, but I took it of my own accord. Like, took it of my own accord, and I'm sorry. What do we do now? You know, sin always has consequences, you know, that you can't necessarily avoid. Like, if I'm harsh with my wife, I'm going to hurt her feelings, and then I'm going to have work to do. But I can own that I was harsh with my wife and move forward with confession and forgiveness, asking her forgiveness and looking for her grace, especially if both people are grounded biblically, right?
Well, I think along that line too, Sean, one of the aspects that I think is definitely hard, you know, not even just in the context of marriage, but just in the terms of living a biblical life, right? Seeking the Lord, following his word, is so much of the way scripture is written is the onus is on me regardless of what the other person does, right? So, you know, you think about this in terms of the Bible calls us to forgive. Does that mean, you know, the other person came and apologized? Not necessarily, right? The Bible calls us to love those who are our enemy or pray for those who persecute us, right? We're like, wait, hold on. No. If they're still behaving this way, I don't want to behave this way, you know? And in the context of marriage, the Bible gives us instruction, you know, here's how we are to behave as a husband or as a wife. And there's not a contingent clause in any of those cases to say, you know, if you're a husband and your wife is behaving this way, then you respond this way. Or if you're a wife and your husband's behaving this way, then you respond this way, you know. And I think that, you know, that's where it gets back to that selfishness, you know, you're talking about this idea that, like, okay, my wife is, let's say, behaving in a way that's disrespectful to me, or I feel is disrespectful, whether it actually is or not. And so I'm going to respond by then not doing what God's called me to do, you know, which is to love my wife, right? Ephesians 5, to serve her as Christ does the church, which means to die, right? Or even Colossians 3, where it says a husband can't be harsh with his wife. Instead, you know, love her, right? Or even 1 Peter 3, 7, where you're called to outdo your wife in showing her honor, right? As an heir of the grace of Christ. That's intense stuff, right? And I don't feel like it. And then on the reverse side, you know, wives are called to submit to their husbands. They're called to respect their husbands, right? The end of Ephesians 5 speaks to that, or Ephesians 5, 22, I guess, speaks to that as well. And the same thing, Colossians 3, same kind of encouragements. So how do you help when you're engaging, you know, as we do pastorally all the time? We're dealing with these couples where, like you said, they're not bad people. They're both good-hearted people. They genuinely want to be good husbands and wives. I think that's true in most cases. You know, they genuinely want to have a good, healthy marriage. They genuinely want to even, you know, there's that part of us that always wants to do the hard thing that God calls us to do, even if the flesh part of us gets in the way of that. You know, there's still that desire there. But how do you help them, you know, break that crazy cycle, is the way they put it in the Love and Respect series, that, you know, I feel unloved, so I act out without respect, and they feel unrespected, so then they act out without love. And it seems like a lot of that kind of thing. How do you help them just break that cycle?
Yeah, I like the way that Eggridge kind of addresses that cycle too, right? Because he fights that with, first and foremost, going, whichever the wife or the husband, whoever's the most mature, right, that they're the one that stops the cycle, right? They jump off the crazy cycle first, and they apologize and stop it from going, right? And, you know, that can be a gut check for somebody, because it doesn't have to be husband and it doesn't have to be wife that stops this first. I mean, either one can jump off. We've been given free will. We've been given our own responsibility to be a light for Christ. And so it doesn't have to fall on one person or the other. But when you're trying to help people get here, right, like a lot of it has to do with trying to get them to get past their feelings. Like feelings, like we were saying, like, They're legit. They're always legit. They're always legit. Most of the time when we're talking about them in these negative contexts of like struggle and strife and conflict, like they're all negative emotions. You know, they're hurt, they're frustration. They're all over the place. They're disappointment, they're grief. Like they're all uncomfortable emotions and they're all legitimate, but they all scream, I don't like this. I mean, that's what emotions tell us. They tell us that if they're happy, they tell us we like the things that are going on. And if they're unhappy, they tell us we don't like the things that are going on. And to get people to understand and accept that they're just letting you know where you're at with things, they're more like a temperature check. But that doesn't mean that the conclusions that they're reaching, like he never listens to me or she just hates me, is legit. That's not the truth that you're coming back to. And if you can get them to understand too, that that's okay, that they have those emotions, but those are influenced by what we think. Those are influenced by how we interpret the information. And if we can open that up to, maybe I'm not right. Maybe what my gut is telling me, maybe even what my intuition is telling me, is not accurate because I can't read other people's minds and I don't know what they're actually thinking, then you can start to create a crack there where there wasn't one before. And you can get people to go, okay, maybe I don't have this as much as I thought I did. Maybe there is a different interpretation here. And then you can move towards a different outcome, because you're always trying to get, like I agree with you, Jamie, like, people want to succeed. Like they're never not trying to succeed. Like I said, they're not waking up trying to plot the demise of the fact that they loved each other. They fell in love. They felt drawn. They wanted to connect well and live well. They just found themselves in a spot where they're stuck. and now they need to get unstuck. But try as you might, if you listen to the same voice in your head and you reach the same conclusions over and over, you're just going to do the same things over and over. And so you try to create cracks for them where they can start to undermine their own preconceived outcomes, their silent agreements that they need to break, the whisperings of accusation that come with the accuser, like all these types of things that you're hitting on, and then try to give them hope. Like, okay, if you're not God, then there's room for growth here. Everybody can grow a little bit, and you may not know your spouse as well as you think you do, because it turns out nobody knows anybody as well as they think they do.
When I think too, also recognizing that people change over time. I remember, you know, one time a guy came up to me after, you know, a men's study at church, and he was doing that, you know, hem and haw thing that guys do when they have something that they really want to talk to you about, but they don't know how to just come out with it. You know, if you know what I'm talking about, seems like it's a very benign conversation that you're like, okay, I get the sense you want to go somewhere, but I don't know where you're going unless you tell me. It was one of those conversations. And finally, I was just like, hey, what did you want to talk about? I get the sense that you're having, or there's something on your mind and you want to share it. I don't know what that is unless you tell me, you know. And finally he came out with it. He was saying that his wife and he hadn't had a good sexual relationship. And, you know, which is a good indicator, something's wrong, right? There's a problem somewhere. And I asked him, you know, the simple question, how are you loving your wife? Which he had a great answer to the question. In fact, he listed out a bunch of things that I think most women probably would think is awesome, right? That they're like, yeah, this is a great, these are great things to do. This is a great way to serve and love and care for your family. This is awesome. And I said, you know, I think you're a really good husband to somebody else's wife. And he's like, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, well, obviously you're doing these things and they're not connecting with your wife. So that's obviously not how she's, you know, how she receives love or something. And then I asked the question, how does your wife receive love? And he pulled out, I kid you not, he pulled out a laminated card out of his wallet. I love this. This is such a dude thing to do. Where he had listed out like his wife's favorite color, his wife's favorite flowers, his wife's, you know, he had this whole thing, which is awesome. But this thing was done like 20 years before, you know, it had been done where at one point this was his wife's favorite color. It was his wife's favorite flower. It was, you know, all these sorts of things. And it included love language as well. But it didn't take into account the fact that people grow and people change. And I totally get this. This is how most men think. I'm like this as well. Once you figure it out, you just keep doing what works, right? You don't. And yet, obviously it wasn't working, because most likely over time, his wife had grown, his wife had changed, and he just hadn't recognized that. And so I, you know, you see that kind of thing a lot. It seems like where it's like, even when we thought we knew, you know, how to communicate well or how to connect well, or we thought we were doing the right thing, it's since morphed and changed. And then you're back in that struggle again. But how do you help couples with that kind of thing, that the person they married is not the same person today? And how do you help them recognize that marriage needs to grow and change along with people?
Yeah. Usually I start with the idea, you know, it seems pretty, it, you know, it's just not men, it's definitely women, like, as well. Like, we seem to buy into the idea pretty easily that when we say I do, that, okay, we've accomplished this mission and now love the feeling of love will sustain us and we'll be happier, you know, happy ever after. And that we've nailed it down. But people seem to buy in also to the notion that, you know, once you reach adulthood, that you're done developing. And it's just a false notion. Like, sanctification alone tells us that we're not done developing for the whole of our life here on this side. Like, we're going to continue to grow and develop, you know. And when you find a person that really struggles with the idea that this is the way I am, then you find a peer person that really is unwilling to grow and learn, you know. And relationships have to change because people change, because you don't want the same things when you're 5 years old as you do at 15, and you don't want the same things at 25 or 35 or 55. And that's one person, let alone take two people, put them together, and then you have an ever shifting, growing relationship. In fact, the way I put it to most couples is that your marriage is like a puppy, and a puppy left untrained eats your furniture, digs holes in your yard, and poops on the floor. And if you don't want to train the puppy, that's what you'll get in your marriage too, because a puppy takes constant training. The buy-in is that your relationship never leaves the puppy stage, because two people are always changing. Like, it's just a false narrative that we will be the same person today as we are 10 years from now. Most people can recognize that and accept that. They just haven't applied it to their relationships. Most people put their relationships on the back burner of a stove and just forget about it, thinking that everything else will maintain them. That, you know, because they have kids together, because they have a retirement plan, because they go on vacation, because they have the same friends, that will get them through. None of those things has anything to do with their relationship at all. In fact, all of those things actually come in between them as a husband and a wife. They're all even physical representations of things that are between you. Your kid literally has nothing to do with your marriage. That's your family relationship, and that's a totally different dynamic than we're talking about. That's just not the same. That's mom and dad stuff, and that's not husband and wife stuff necessarily. And so you'd really just poke on this a lot. A lot of it is just education. People know these things, they just don't apply them. They don't think about it. Who taught you how to do a relationship with anybody? Nobody. Like, my mom and dad didn't sit down with me and say, hey, Sean, let's tell you how to work out conflict. No, they argued and screamed at each other. And I just went, don't do that. And then I looked at my other relationships, marriages in my family, and went, that seems to be okay. Uncle and Annie got it figured out. Okay, maybe I'll do that. I went to K-12. Nobody told me how to work and figure out conflict in school. And so nobody actually really teaches us how to have a healthy relationship. You got to go read it in the Bible, where God starts laying this stuff out for us. But most parents aren't even sitting down with their kids going, here's what you find in the Bible. Here's how to have a healthy relationship. I mean, our first marriage is really into Jesus. And if you start just looking at how we're supposed to treat other members of the body, first and foremost, kindness, compassion, gentleness, with humility, with self-control, like, all those apply to your marriage. Like, that's how God told you to do relationships to begin with. And all that supersedes your husband-wife thing. Like, these are how we're supposed to treat other people. And those things definitely apply to your marriage. They're not below it. They are definitely incorporated into it. And people grow over time. And you can't get away from it.
Yeah, so related to all this is people changing over time. The other thought that comes to my mind, because I've seen this with married couples, and I've seen this, I think, just in general, but how people experienced their growing up years, how their how their parents related to one another in their marriage certainly has an impact, but also just the impact of past experiences, whether that's trauma or sin. I'm kind of just curious, maybe this is opening a big can of worms, but what are some ways to help people work through those past experiences that seem to have gotten something of a foothold into how the husband and wife are relating to each other and how it's negatively affecting their intimacy now in marriage?
Sure. Like my past has a lot to do with being abandoned, you know, abandoned in a broken home, abandoned in some other times in my life. They kind of just had this repeating drama of just abandonment from moving and multiple things, right? And so this played out in my own marriage with like plans having to change or commitments falling through. And none of these were like drastic things. Like one of the worst fights that my wife and I had was over the fact that we had plans with friends coming to our house, and then she had an opportunity to visit her sister, which was rare. And I agreed that she should go visit her sister, except for that meant abandoning the plans that we had. And because I was such a protector of not doing those things, which had been so hurtful in my own life, even though I could rationally go, this makes more sense for you to go visit your sister, man, I imploded. Like, I just could not get over, like, and then I couldn't even get over it. And then I was mad at myself more than even like her, because I didn't understand where this was coming from. Like, I didn't understand that this was a childhood wound that was really manifested in such a bad way, right? And so part of like coming back after a conflict like this where it's broken down and people are falling out of sorts and really trying to heal from these types of wounds is coming back and trying to talk through and empathize with the other person and really try to put on their shoes and walk in that, which again becomes really hard for people because, you know, now you got hurt feelings involved. Why should I come back and listen to you or care about where you were coming from when, you know, you've hurt my feelings and things haven't gone that well. She went and visited her sister, but here's this looming thing waiting at home that takes away from her visit and she has to come back to, right? And so lots of conflict doesn't get resolved in the moment. Lots of conflict gets resolved after the fact where you're trying to do that reconnecting. But then when you're talking about like, how did my parents do this stuff before? How do I relate to the world? How does my personality come into play? You're really trying to understand somebody and get down to why they act the way they do, why they think the way they do. And that's not only just a lifelong process of discovery. That takes time just to sit there and listen to somebody and try to go, so really you're saying when even something as simple as like getting together to play some games with some friends, that this reminds you of like your dad not spiking to you for like 5 years, like you losing all your friends when you moved, like you go to such a weird place of hurt there and loss, that must be really horrible for you, right? Like coming in and putting yourself in that place so that healing can take place. Because most of the time when we're screaming, not necessarily just like verbally, but screaming out in pain with these types of conflicts, we're just waiting for somebody to actually hear us, you know, to meet us there. I mean, that's what Jesus does all the time. He cuts right to the crux of where we're at. And that's what we're asking for our spouse to do. It's not always their place to play that role, for sure. But with our spouse, we're talking about the closest relationship in the universe besides the one that we have with God. And our spouses are uniquely equipped to know us in a more intimate way than anybody else in the world should ever get the chance to, besides God himself. Like, empathy has a huge part to play in getting to understand where people are coming from. And empathy, like the rest of like how we got taught to do our relationships, that's a learned skill. Nobody taught me how to like pick out an emotion in another person growing up, especially as a dude. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we're taught more or less to suck it up, buttercup, and pull up your pants and don't cry. My mom stopped dating guys because they said boys don't cry when I was a kid, thankfully. But, you know, women seem to get a little bit of heads up on emotions and can pick them out a little bit. Testosterone and estrogen definitely play out in a design a lot differently. But both have work to do. And empathy is a massive piece of that, of being able to speak life into somebody else.
John, thanks so much for joining us in this conversation. And really, I think whether you are a married person listening to this or single, thinking about marriage, or just generally speaking, you're wanting to understand the marriage relationship better, I think this is super helpful. And it's something where we can talk many more minutes about this kind of thing. So we're going to have to pick it up in the next episode. But thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.